Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Hey, what up, boxing fans? This is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Wednesday afternoon. I got to close tonight, and I may have to go in a little bit early, so I figured I'm going to knock this out and not have to do a show at, say, 2, 3 in the morning, my time. So, anyway, we are back. We have a lot to talk about in a short amount of time, so we're not going to hold you too long here. It won't be a three-hour show today. We won't be able to have as many callers as normal either, unfortunately, but sometimes you just got to do a show when you can do it instead of wait until – it would have been a Friday, so I figured screw it. Anyway, if this is your first time listening to the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast, it streams live here generally Tuesday or Wednesday. It streams live at blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. Streams live and archives. It's basically, you know, the headquarters for Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast, which includes boxing, football, and basketball as well throughout the year. We're also available, though, on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, same thing, right? Player FM, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, basically anywhere to listen to your podcast, you can find the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast ready there for a listen. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network. That's available anywhere, including iHeartRadio, and including the ability to stream it on Spotify if you have Spotify. So head on over to the gruelingtruth.net. That's the gruelingtruth.net. They got a great sponsor over there, mybookie.ag. So head on over there and listen to, you know, a podcast about boxing or football or basketball or something. Read an article. I do boxing and football and basketball articles as well. And while you're at it, place a bet. I'll link it right to mybookie.ag. So we are going to cover last week's stuff, right? There is a fair amount to cover, whether it's Callum Smith looking really impressive in his biggest win of his career. Basically, his first step-up fight. And he looked great, especially the way he ended it. I think that was actually the biggest thing there. The way he ended that fight was really impressive. So we'll talk about that. Speaking of impressive, Devin Haney took care of Burgos. We'll also cover a little bit of that PBC on FS1. Obviously, the main event was canceled because of Victor Ortiz's alleged issues, right? We don't really know if he did what they're saying he did. There's sexual assault. There's a variety of things there. So, like I said, we're not going to get into that too much because we'll let that play its course out, but that was not a fight. I was kind of looking from that forward to that fight just on a nice TV fight type of look on it. You know what I mean? I wasn't, like, highly anticipating it whatsoever, but I thought it was a pretty good fight, potentially. We obviously didn't get it. And, of course, we'll look to what is a busy weekend. Technically speaking, I think you'd have to say that McGregor and Khabib for the UFC rule the weekend. we'll chatter about that. We're not going to get too deep into that. DAZN, Matchroom USA and DAZN obviously partnered a while back. We heard about the 8-year billion-dollar deal. Well, this is their first U.S. product. It's their first card in Chicago. So we're going to preview that. We'll also preview some other things going on DAZN. Inoue and Payano, and also Troyansky against Relic. That's the World Boxing Super Series doubleheader there. It's actually more fights than that. ESPN2 and ESPN Plus has a card. That DAZN card from Chicago on Saturday is headlined by Vargas and Delorme. So we'll preview the weekend, give our thoughts on the weekend. It is one of those weekends, boxing-wise, that maybe there's not that it fight. We're going to see how good Payano is. But on these weekends, we say it several times a year, there's just moments where you go, yeah, I don't know, I'll probably just watch that UFC fight, that McGregor-Khabib fight. And then in the boxing world, shit pops off, basically. So that's what I'm hoping for, that's for sure. We have a fair amount of news, obviously. The big news came not long ago. HBO bows out of the boxing business, which isn't a 100% complete shocker if you look at their product especially since 2016. And how many Stay Busy fights they had on their air. And the last 2 years, sure, they've had some good fights. It's just few and far between. And this year, it was not that good of content in large gaps. And I kind of felt like they were going to be able to keep Canelo or something like that and build Bivol or some other guys like that and just kind of have, a handful of shows, maybe 8-10 shows a year, and stay in the pay-per-view business. That's kind of what I thought it would be, but it's completely out of the business. Now, there's potential down the line for like a flagpole event, something like that where it'll move the needle. Obviously, a guy like Canelo can move the needle pay-per-view-wise. But they just weren't willing to invest anymore. And to be quite frank, some people say, well, HBO has a ton of money. They just decided not to because they weren't making money off it. And that is true. They didn't value it anymore because the last handful of years, they haven't put on, a good value for the customer, for a boxing customer. So it does kind of make sense. However, you can't help to think, though, maybe HBO said, hey, if we invested the same amount into a series, there's a better chance, over the years, the next several years, that one of these are going to be able to pop and we'll be able to sell it in a variety of ways down the line, to the consumer, unlike HBO, beyond the pay-per-view. And that's cool, too, but when they got rid of Heyman in 2013, and I remember one of the fights that you could say, I guess, broke the straw's back, or the camel's back, the straw that broke the camel's back, I'm a little bit out of it right now. I slept in today. And I didn't think I'd be doing an afternoon show for sure. So, pardon me. Still kind of getting the cobwebs out, so to speak. But I remember the heads over there saying, they were mad because Broner and Malignaggi got shopped to Showtime. So Showtime was just willing to pay more. Steven Espinoza had taken over there at the time. And, if a network's willing to pay more, then that's not really that, that it is what it is. It was okay when HBO would let Showtime build up an Andre Ward or some other fighters, Dawson and some other fighters, and then they just cherry pick them. So what's the difference there? You think Showtime like that? You think Showtime like being, second fiddle as far as budget for so long and name recognition? I mean, they had Tyson at one point in Trinidad, and once they got Mayweather, that was the key. To kick, not only not sign Mayweather to that deal that Showtime, did, six-fight deal for big, big money, They also just said no more Heyman fighters, which turned into no more Golden Boy fighters for quite, you know, about 2 years or so. So that was obviously a bad move. And then, you know, not being able to be on the same page with Top Rank, not to say it's easy to be on the same page with Heyman or Bob Arum, but to not be on the same page enough to where, you know, he moved on, then they were stuck with not having access, besides Canelo and Golovkin, they didn't have access to most of the talent in this country. So, yeah, after a while, and then if they don't know if they can spend money enough to keep Golovkin or Canelo, well then, you know, what's the point of even being in the business? So we'll also talk about a variety of news and rumors out there. Another rumor that I'm just going to float right now that's been out there for a handful of days, Manny Pacquiao signed a deal with Al Heyman, and there's potential that him and Broner are going to fight next, with the winner fighting Mayweather. Billy Joe Saunders is in some heat again. Last week he was in some heat. Now he's in some heat as well. So there's a variety. Mikey Garcia news on him as well. And kind of quick shot hit news. Quick shot hit news. Does that make sense? Quick hits. just real quick notes. Not rumors or nothing, but just news out of the WBC convention. Because remember last week we talked about, you know, Canelo and Charlo, and are they going to make, you know, make Charlo the mandatory? Meaning, you know, exactly what they said. They said, you know, after this fight that someone, if they wanted to keep the WBC, would have to fight Charlo. Jermaro Charlo. So we'll see, you know, if they kept their word, I don't need to go too far into that as far as the sanctioning body keeping their word. Let's start out with a recap, then we'll go news, then we'll preview this weekend. So Callum Smith and George Groves. Good fight, pretty good fight, I thought. But a hell of a way to end it for Callum Smith. Credit to him. You know, his only real step-up fight that he had, in my mind anyway, was Rocky Fielding. And he took care of him in the first round. It was really impressive, but it was hard to tell based off that fight and other fights that you've seen, even these last couple, you know, in the World Boxing Super Series. It was hard to see what level he was on. It didn't look like he had a lot of power beyond the Rocky Fielding fight. Once he started going up, I guess you could say, in contender range, right? So you didn't quite know exactly who he was, whereas at least Groves, you knew who he was. Now, some of that was negative. Some of that was chinny. Some of that was wear and tear on him. Obviously, the shoulder injury. Some people have said, you know, George Groves didn't really look right. I'm not saying he looked tip-top great by any stretch of the imagination, but I wouldn't go and say that he didn't look right all the way. Maybe he wasn't 100% because of that shoulder injury. Maybe the wear and tear's caught up with him. Maybe it's a combination. But he was winning plenty of rounds, and let's get to that. I had him winning the first round. Slow, you know, fight to begin with. I kind of figured that. Both of them landed a few decent right hands late in the first round, but I thought the jab was good enough. And Groves was mixing up the jab to the head and body. Kept that jab going in the second and third, landed a few right hands. But for me, that's when Callum Smith started getting his jab going. And he landed probably four or five clean right hands that were the best shots of the fight early on. I would say the second and third. There was some mid-round and the third-round exchanges that were pretty, you know, decent. You could see Groves was countering in spots. But the combination punching and just a couple of them, you know, nothing major. And their hard right hands were good enough for the second and third for me to go to Smith. But then I thought Groves won the fourth and fifth. I saw jabs coming from Smith, but I thought he missed a lot. Now, you know, there was a couple. The fight kind of moved inside a little bit. There was some exchanges and whatnot. But I thought the jab to the head and body mixed with a little bit of movement and kind of pot-shotting right hands were doing the trick, man. And there was movement. Like the second and third round, I thought there was too much movement from Groves. I didn't think he was being effective enough, whereas he kind of mixed movement and being at the edge of that pocket in the fourth and fifth, enough for me to win those rounds. Like I said, he was starting to counter, and it just seemed like Smith wasn't as active enough. Now, coming to the sixth round, I saw Groves boxing well. He was a little bit busier. I felt he was winning the round, to be honest with you. And Smith did close the round really well, though, with the left hand. And he landed some really clean shots. So he closed really well. That sixth round, I'm not really sure. Seventh round, wait a second. Was it the seventh or sixth that he got knocked out? I kind of, at the end of my notes, I kind of just went right to the knockout. There was 86 seconds left in that round, the last round. And I think it was a left hook that started it again. He kind of buzzed. And there was, like, some nice hooks and a few right hands. And, you know, when Groves hit the canvas, you kind of knew, okay, dude, wow. You know, there was some right to the – there was some uppercuts, too. I'd like to – I think it was right hand uppercuts. Really nice body shots. And it was a right hand to the body that ultimately ended it for Joe's Groves. It was I really liked the way Callum Smith jumped on him when he knew he had him hurt, and I believe it was a left hook that started that kind of buzzed him again, and because he had buzzed him a little bit before. And like I said, credit to Callum Smith for the way he finished it, and it was the seventh round. I just had to double check. I didn't want to be up here sitting here saying the wrong stuff. But, yeah, I mean, the sixth round was closer because of those clean shots to close. Maybe he did win that round, Smith. But I had him, you know, winning some of that seventh round, too. So, I don't know, man. That it was a good fight. But I can't sit there and blame it on Groves being a step slow and that's it. Because, I thought he actually fought pretty well. I did. And like I said, he was winning, you know, some of these rounds, a good chunk of them. In fact, I had it either 3-3 or 4-2 for Groves. So, you know, I don't know, man. I really don't know. So, like I said, some people maybe they picked, because I did, I picked Groves, but some people, when they pick them, they just can't be wrong straight up. And I'm not saying that it was, like, the best Groves I've ever seen, but it was 3-3, and as we know, he has a track, you know, history. He definitely has a history of front-running in big fights and then, well, getting knocked out or at least hurt. So, overall, though, really nice win for Callum Smith. Is he the best 168-pounder? No, we don't know that yet. I mean, you could say, yeah, I think he is, for sure. You could say, yep, I think he is, based off that, and that's cool. No doubt about it. That's fine. But that'd be an opinion. He still has to fight a couple more of these fighters. And, you know, Ramirez doesn't really seem to be challenging himself. They're trying to set up a second fight with Hart. He had a tough fight last September with Hart. That's really the only tough fight he had in the last year or so. So it's been pretty much a cakewalk for Ramirez. So he, you know, it would have been nice to see him in there. Benavidez, it would have been nice to see him, or one of the Durrells as well, no doubt about it. Now, Benavidez did, though, you know, still have some good fights. You know, he had the Porky Medina fight was a good fight that he, you know, showed out in, that, you know, got him a title and whatnot. The Gavril fight last September was a really good fight, and it actually kind of woke him up and taught him a lesson as a young, you know, fighter on the way up here trying to build his name. And because you saw in the rematch, he handled his business. Now, obviously, Benavidez has a little bit of issues, you know, with the cocaine testing and whatnot. But it is what it is. It is what it is. So, 100%, especially the UK fans, I'm sure, you know, an all UK final, you'd think, hey, man, this is the number one guy. And I can't sit there and argue with you and say, no, it's not 100%. But, like, on the other flip side of that is, well, I don't think you can clear-cut say that either until he fights a couple more people. But either way, big win for him. Does George Groves retire? Doesn't sound like he's going to. I don't know, man. Like I said, he was potentially winning the fight, you know, and maybe he has had an active schedule in the last year and a half, and with that shoulder injury, you know, maybe it was a big deterrent, you know, and maybe he's going to come out and kind of really talk about it and how he probably forced it. And, you know, there was a lot of postponement, and a lot of people didn't even think this fight would happen, maybe, you know. So anyway, good performance by him, no doubt. A great performance, especially on the stoppage. He really impressed me with that stoppage. That was a good body shot, man. And usually you have to stop George Groves. Am I right? Usually you have to have him, you know, out for him to not keep going anymore. So, obviously, it was a good enough shot. On to Showbox. Showbox was a really good card. Now, the main event wasn't some kind of back-and-forth great fight, but it was a good test, good, you know, just a good fight for Devin Haney. He took on Juan Carlos Burgos, who's a vet, who's been in there, actually dropped Mikey Garcia. Didn't, like, overly hurt him or anything, but he's a guy that's been in and around. He's been on HBO. He's been on ESPN. He's a solid fighter. Did he win a round? No, I don't think he did. I could be wrong. Maybe he won. Oh, well, maybe he did. I got to look at my scorecard as we go through here, but I'm looking, and I'm not seeing really too many rounds to give him. But Haney looked good. He was moving probably too much, considering he wasn't active enough. So the first round was close. You could have maybe gave it to Burgos. He landed some punches, but not enough. Neither guy really did. It was really Haney's jab. But Burgos had his jab going, and he started countering well early. To the body. In the second round, he definitely had some good moments there. Haney, though, you know, was actually started landing his left hook to pair with the jab, and he started to become a little bit busier. And so he was kind of moving forward, becoming a little bit more aggressive, landing hard right hands, kind of pot shot style. And like I said, a late left hook, even in that third round, I marked down, was pretty big. A bunch of right hands, a bunch of them in the fourth round from Haney. It's not to say Burgos didn't land, because he had a good flurry. He landed to the body well. Then Haney started countering or leading with the right hand. He was pretty slick in there. He looked pretty good. When they were up close, you know, he had kind of that shoulder thing going defensively. And then he was going in and out. He wasn't using movement just to get away all the time. He was, you know, kind of mixing it up, jumping in and out. I think a right hand, maybe an uppercut as well. Maybe it was a right uppercut in the fifth round. Definitely buzzed Burgos. He landed a couple more right hands after that. And, you know, I thought Burgos actually responded pretty well. He was able to get Haney on the ropes throughout the fight, but especially in the sixth round. Of course, uppercuts and right hands, counter shots off the ropes by Haney. Seventh and eighth was kind of more damaged by Haney. The ninth round was a two-way round. That was a fun round there. I thought he closed a little stronger. Both of them finished pretty strong. Overall, though, I thought he looked sharp, like I said, and you know, he got a good test against a hardened vet. You know, he wasn't going to hit the guy and the guy just falls down or anything like that. He's now gotten a fair amount of rounds at this young stage of his career. What is he, only 19? Something like that. So he looked really good. And we'll see where he goes from here. So, you know, kudos to Showbox, because the rest of the card, I'm going to go over it really quick here. It was entertaining. It was really good. The first fight was DeAndre Ware, who was undefeated, against Kem Killich. I think it's Killich. This was a good fight. This was a good fight. I thought Killich kind of started out good back and forth right away, though. I just thought Killich maybe outlanded him. Both of them in this fight were going to the body, though. These guys were ripping shots at the body on each other. But I kind of thought White may have won the second and third. It was a good scrap. It was close. But I kind of thought, man, you know, he started to take over. And the fourth round was a competitive round. I kind of thought the right hands were the bigger of the two lands, so that's why I gave it to him. But overhand rights by Ware in that second and third round, that was impressive. And there was a lot of good exchanges. Left hooks was a key weapon for Killich. I gave Killich the fifth. And then I thought actually Ware won the sixth because he was starting to pressure, and he got the fight inside. He started putting in good work there. Killich got the seventh. It was a great round, though. Great back-and-forth round. The jab and the pivot, really pivoting off that jab in a late rally. Kind of thought he threw a little bit more combinations to close in the seventh and eighth, probably. I had it 5-3 for Killich. Killich landed 253 to 241. Killich threw 734 to 684. But both of them very, really, you know, threw a lot of punches, and they were accurate. I mean, Ware had 35% of his punches landed, and Killich had 34, you know, and in eight rounds for them both to be right around that 700 punch mark and well over 200, 253 to 241, that's a sign of a good fight, more than likely, right? So, yeah, Killich, what was the scorecards? He killed him to the body, 94 to 40, by the way. I wanted to bring that up. I think it was 79-74, two cars, and then there was a 79-73, something like that, if I remember correctly. So that was a good fight, very good fight, competitive, equally matched. I thought Killich won, but not by much. Two undefeated fighters putting it on the line, and it was a good fight. Then we had the rematch between Thomas Matisse and Zora Hamazarian. Hamazarian. I think it's Hamazarian. And Hamazarian got screwed earlier this year. He should have won the fight. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts. He should have won this fight, so I was really glad to see, you know, that we got a rematch. That was pretty dope. However, Matisse fought better in the rematch. You know, the first round I give to Hamazarian. I thought he was a little bit more active. Matisse won the next two, though. His jab and movement were a little bit too much for Hamazarian to catch up to. Fourth round, there was some really good exchanges. And I believe Hamazarian definitely hurt him. His legs were wobbled. You could see Matisse holding. He landed more hard left hands and just started turning up the pressure. Did that in the fifth as well, landing the bigger shots. However, I thought in the sixth round that Matisse kind of sturdied his legs. And even though Hamazarian, the early part of the sixth, kind of looked like what the fourth and fifth were, like mid to late, Matisse flipped it, and he landed the bigger shot. So it was definitely a back-and-forth fight in the seventh round. You could see Matisse landing, like, right hands, and he was countering with him and behind his jab. It would be a jab right hand. But, man, that was a tight round. It seemed like he landed, like, cleaner shots, and he was a little bit more defensively sound then. And I don't know, man. This was a really tight fight. It could have went either way. I'm okay with the draw. Maybe Hamazarian 5-3 could have went either way. It really could have. I'm okay with the draw, and that's exactly what it was. One judge's scorecard had it 77-75 for Matisse. The other had it 77-75 for Hamazarian. And then one judge had it 76-76. The punch stats, Hamazarian 150-93, so he definitely outworked him. Through 525-305, they're right around the same percentage, 30-29%. But yeah, I mean, on my scorecard, I literally had it Hamazarian 5-3 or a draw. But I'd be okay if somebody told me Matisse, you know, won the fight. I'm okay with a draw. I would like to actually see it again. Maybe they could go, you know, their separate ways for a couple fights and then come back to fight each other potentially. I don't know how they're going to work that out, but really good fight. Nobody got screwed in this at all. But yeah, I guess I'd have if you put a gun to my head and said, hey, which one, you know, where'd you lean? I'd probably have to go Hamazarian. I'd probably have to do that. Close fight, though. I just thought he kind of outworked him. Plus, he actually hurt him. He hurt him pretty bad in that fourth round. That's not to say that, you know, Matisse didn't come back, because he did. But, you know, sometimes that's the difference in a tight fight if you actually hurt somebody. So, good fight, though. Very good fight. And a great triple header. Just a solid triple header. Like I said, Haney-Burgos wasn't like the most two-way fight at all. But, you know, considering Burgos didn't win a lot of rounds, he still, I thought, you know, fought pretty damn well. And did I, it was 180-112 on the punch stat. I don't know if I went over that. Haney was kind of busier, 520 for 446, landed at a 35-28 or 25% rate. The judges had that 97. Still a good fight for him, though. You know what I mean? It's a good fight. But really good show box. Probably one of their best show boxes in a while. So on to, let me get a little sip of water here. That's okay, isn't it? If I take a little sip of agua. On to the PBC on FS1, which, like I mentioned earlier, did not, it wasn't like some awesome main event by any stretch of the imagination, but I was looking forward to the fight from just a sheer action fight. But sometimes, you know, Ortiz could have got some, you know, he's a bigger name. Not that he's a name where he's going to sell a bunch of tickets, but he's still a name that if you stopped and saw a good fight, you go, oh, I know this Ortiz dude. You know what I mean? But obviously Ortiz is in trouble for alleged crimes. We'll see how that turns out. It took a little while for this card. It was kind of a blend of fights that are going to be action-packed as the card went on. But early on, there wasn't much there. Jesse Rodriguez in a decent, you know, developmental fight against Reyes. Really hard left hands were a key. Rodriguez buzzed Reyes in the third. Reyes, you know, he brought some pressure for a few rounds. He actually was game, no doubt about it. So that's what I mean by if you're 6-0. And this was, I believe this is Robert Garcia's fighter out of the Garcia camp. But Rodriguez, for me, he really opened up the last few rounds. Hooks and crosses definitely hurt. And almost stopped him in the fifth round, I believe. Was it the fifth? Something like that with Reyes. But it was good action down the stretch, and both of them kind of closed rounds well. And it was a decent fight. But like I said, a good development fight for a young fighter who's only had seven fights. Fulton against Mirez. Mirez has actually over 110 fights. And so he's one of those vets where, and I think I have it someplace. What the hell was it? Here we go. So Fulton now is 14-0, but he came into that 13-0. And Miraz, he was 61-49-2 with 38 KOs. So well, over 110 fights, dude. That's pretty crazy. But it's not, you know, I don't know. It was a pretty slow fight. Miraz was just basically, you know, he was moving a lot. I mean, he wasn't even on his 10-speed or bike, dude. He was on a scooter. He was on a scooter, man. That guy did not want to blemish his record anymore. So now he moves to 61-50-2. But, he went the distance, the 8-round distance. Dude's fighting 8-rounders with 110 fights. That's funny, man. That's funny. But like I said, he was on his motorbike, dude, because he didn't want it. Now, F.A. Ajaba? I think it is how you say it. Took on Nick Jones, who was 7-0 technically. FA is now 7-0, I believe, or 6-0. He came out with his jab, which is pretty concrete. Good jab, good basis for for his stance and whatnot. He was landing some good power shots with his right hand. He was getting hit some though, and sometimes when you look at these early fights, sometimes it's hard to tell exactly, like, how good defense is ultimately going to be. You know? Sometimes you go, ooh, I don't know, dude. Ooh, I don't know. You could probably say the same thing about Joe Joyce. But then other times, then you see him tighten up and you go, okay, well, maybe not. So I'm not going to go too hard on him getting hit a fair amount in a short fight, but it is what it is. Either way, a left hook and a right hand concussion punch, dude. He was working the body and head, by the way. I mean, F.A. just concussion punched him. It was a hard right hand. He was out for a few seconds. Now, this Nick Jones did get up. His nose was all bloody. He was out, though. He was out. He was out cold, but he got up. He actually got to his feet. He was like, well, I'm up. Well, let's go. We're good. No, we're fine. It's like, no, you're not, dude. No, you're not. Also, Jose Beldras was in actually a tight fight. Balderas, against Martinez. And this is Jose, not Carlos. But that was actually a good two-way fight. That was actually a decent fight. Joey Spencer, now 5-0 with 5 KOs. He's the guy who I think has made his debut in April in Minneapolis, put on a show there. This dude is knocking fools out left and right. He started with body work, started landing hard left hooks to the head and body. I think it was a hard right hand that caused the knockdown. And then, it was done. Not much to report there. But Joey Spencer, man. He's making his way up, and he's, hardcore fan base-wise, he's starting to, they're starting to fancy him, right? They're starting to be like, hey, who's this fucking? He's knocking everybody out, so we'll see. In the co-feature, Joe Joyce took on Ingo Kalizis, who's a solid fighter, nothing special, but I thought this was going to be all right. Let's see. This is a good measuring stick. Let's see where this guy's at, because I've seen Kalizis, and I kind of want to see how he does in this fight. I thought it was a pretty good – he made his American debut. Sounds like he's going to be on Joe Joyce, by the way. He's going to be on the undercard. We'll talk more a little bit about actual undercard fights for Wilder Fury, not the ones that – have been fantasized about. I like fantasy too, but I don't see some of these fights that they're talking about happening just because of the overhead and the fact that it's going to be on pay-per-view and they need to make their money back or at least attempt to. You could see first round was slow. You could see like Joyce was throwing a jab, but he was trying to cut the ring off. Second round, Landed a few shots early, ended up dropping Khaleesi's. I think it was more left hooks and right hands to the head down the stretch. 45 seconds left of the third round. Joyce scored another knockdown. Landon, you know, you could see the power shots were starting to wear Khaleesi's down even by the third round. Khaleesi's. I just call him Khaleesi. Khaleesi, like it's Game of Thrones. You know, Game of Thrones, not in 2018. We got to wait till April 2019. So no boxing, no Game of Thrones. I think I can just have HBO and Amazon and just have it updated. And if I want to watch something live, I'll just watch it live on Amazon. I'm not even going to have HBO on my DirecTV anymore. It's the point. So he scored a knockdown there, 10-8. Landed some really, really hard shots to close the round. Could have been a TKO potentially in that fourth round. Didn't really matter, though, because fifth round came around. Early combinations hurt him again. Really the third, fourth, and fifth, he was hurt, Khaleesi's, not Khaleesi. Joe Joyce, though, got the job done. Looked pretty good. Back-to-back fights, well, he's probably looked pretty good, you know, in most of his fights, though. He does have, the thing about Joe Joyce, and this is part of his development as a pro, he's got this thing where when he throws a punch, sometimes it's technically sound, it's accurate, he does kind of bring the, I'm just coming at you, and I'm trying to knock you out feel to the fight, and that's pretty cool. Same with Efe, you know, these are young, good fighters that are being groomed through the PBC, through Al, both of them are signed with Al, so I'm sure Fox and FS1 are jumping on these dudes, like, hey, we're investing in these guys early. We can't maybe get some of these Showtime guys in big fights all the time. But, hey, if we invest in these, then we get the pick of the litter, excuse me, for these. So, clearly Joe Joyce and Efe, you know, have a future there. And that's Ajogba, too, by the way. I keep just saying his first name. But the thing, going back to Joyce, sometimes he throws some combinations where you're like, wow, dude, this dude could punch. And he's very aggressive, very pressure fighter, right? But then there's times where his shots are wide. They come a little slow. It seems like he's kind of getting hit too much. But like I said, when you're developing, you know, this is the development time where you're like, all right, we'll see if he can tighten up that defense or if he's just trying to put it on a show and knock a guy out at this level, you know? So we'll see. The rumor is, and we'll get into that, but Joe Joyce against Gerald Washington on the Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder undercard. And I'd be all for that. That would be a big test. That, you know, in the sixth fight, you never know. That might maybe too early. He also might knock, you know, two shits out of, you know, out of Washington. So it's tough to say. In what was the co-feature, one of the co-features, but turned into the main event, Brandon Figueroa took on Oscar Escandon. Just a vet is Oscar Escandon. And another good, and this is what this card was about, development. This was a good development fight for Figueroa, Omar Figueroa's younger brother, who comes in shape a lot. He looks good on the scale. Not necessarily, you know, you can't really say that about his brother as far as, you know, weight issues. But the fight started really well. It was an action-packed first round. Definitely a lot of inside fighting. There was a takedown. Escandon took down, nice double-leg takedown in the second round. But Figueroa, although, you know, Escandon did land, he did have some success. But the busier work and the body work was from Figueroa. That's something that he does well, just like his brother. But like I said, the hooks, few uppercuts as well started coming out. Just a good scrap, though. Good inside fight. Figueroa landed the jab and straight right hands, eating up that body. Figueroa, I believe, had a small cut on his left eye or like his high part of his cheekbone. Great exchanges in the fifth round, though. That was fun. And a lot in the sixth round as well. A lot of two-way stuff, especially the last minute or so. So, but overall, you know, Figueroa got more rounds. He's a good young fighter. Escandone, we've seen him. He's a vet, whatever. A decent card. Nothing great. The first part was really just prospect stuff for the most part. Besides that, that Balderas fight was actually two-way. Most of it was just developmental stuff, nothing to write home about or get too excited about. But that about wraps up the weekend. Oh, I do want to say, what is it, Añejos Jerwin? He actually, it was supposed to be a stay-busy fight for Jerwin. But he retained his title, but he fought to a draw with Santiago. Alejandro Santiago. And this was supposed to be a stay busy fight. But that wasn't the case. It was a back and forth fight, dude. It was a good fight. And I didn't score it. I watched it while I was out someplace on my phone on the ESPN app. So I didn't score it. But you know, the first round I thought Añejos, I thought he looked pretty good. Jerwin was, you know, landing a good jab, landing some good, really hard punches, kind of pushing Santiago back. But then it started to, like, become a lot of exchanges. These guys were going at it in the second and third. And Santiago actually flipped it. I thought he won the third and fourth, that mid-round stuff. He was showing he was more than just game. He had some big right hands. And some nice left hooks. As the round, you know, maybe the fifth and sixth and all that, I did think that Jerwin started to kind of find his rhythm. He finally got to a decent distance. And, you know, he started landing the better shots, the cleaner shots, the more accurate shots. But both guys, the way they closed were you could, I don't know. Santiago didn't close the maybe an 11th as much as he probably could. Jerwin, though, I mean, he was swelling up as the fight went down. And, you know, until about maybe 11th, late 11th, 12th round, that's, and I remember Santiago was really, I thought he was getting the better of the exchanges. He was starting to really take over at the end. And, you know, it's a fight that I'm going to watch again and actually score it. So I was okay with the draw, but that was a tight fight, dude. That was a really, really tight fight. So you got to pump the brakes on this dude being, you know, the next Manny Pacquiao. And obviously that's the promoter talk. You know, sometimes these you know, it is what it is. There's not much you're going to be able to do. There's not going to be many Manny Pacquiao's in general, let alone this dude. So, and they don't really fight all that, you know. They don't really fight the same. That's always been a weird thing as well. But anyway, I forgot to mention that, and I do want to go back and watch that fight again. And also, I saw less of this fight, Uzgadaji, because I actually had a little issue with the live stream at this moment. And then my connection was kind of getting mixed up because I was out and about watching these fights. So Uzgadaji didn't really look that good either. And, you know, I kind of ripped this card, but it turned out to be a pretty good card. I can't sit there and, you know, play Monday morning quarterback and just rip the A-sides. You know, the opponents came to fight. Now, it was a non-title, you know, non-168 fight for 10 rounds. Or was it 8 rounds? I don't know. I forgot. But I think it was 10 rounds. So it didn't really do much for me. But it was got a G look like he's just waiting for the next fight. He didn't look that great. He didn't come out and just look dominant like he has been. So we'll see. Maybe he's a levels guy. You know what I mean? There's a lot of fighters out there that fight at levels. So we got a good chunk left of the show. If you want to call in, 646-381-4990 is the number to call. I see some callers kind of hanging out. Maybe they're at work. Maybe they're doing some errands during their day. Either way, thanks for listening. I'd like to thank everybody in general. Not long ago, I passed 700 episodes for Rope It Up Radio Podcast. And that obviously consists of boxing, football, and basketball. And on the boxing side, early on, because, you know, we started Rope It Up Radio Podcast in 2009. So that's when I had a lot more regular co-hosts rather than callers that are basically my co-hosts. That's the way I look at them. You know, that's the way and a lot of people that do call in like to just hang out and listen. And that's cool, too. And I appreciate all of it. But, yeah, there was a post-fight show at one point. And also there was like a Monday show with D-Style back in the day with, you know, Ashy and Beeb and everybody. So shouts out to everybody that's helped me along the way. But, yeah, 700 episodes, man. I'm, you know, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. There was some time where kind of had to, you know, recalculate, reformat the show. But we're back stronger than ever. And really like to thank, you know, everybody that listens to the boxing shows on here and have from the beginning. Like I mentioned, those other shows that were part of the 700, the post shows and the Monday show with D-Style Boxing. And also, you know, the College Ball Show, which has been running since what? 2011, something like that? 2011, 2010? It's only been over here maybe the last 5 years or something like that because it was on its own Blog Talk channel. But the College Ball Show, which is college football, then college basketball. We also do an NBA playoff and free agency podcast that starts in April and goes to like August. And then this year, this fall, started a show for the Vikings, Minnesota Vikings, so an NFL football show. It's called the Purple People Eaters. For those who are like, what the hell is the purple? I get it, but what the hell is that? The Purple People Eaters started out as a nickname for the great teams in the late 60s and 70s, especially the 70s, for the Vikings. Their defensive line, you know, has some really stud players on it. And back in the day, I mean, it does now, but especially back in the day, and they called them the Purple People Eaters. And basically the defense kind of was known as that too, the Purple People Eaters. So if you're wondering, I got a couple of messages like, what the hell's that name? It's just kind of like Rope-A-Dope. You know, it's an old school type vibe to it. But I like to thank everybody. 700 episodes and still going strong. We're not going to quit. We're not stopping this thing. So I appreciate everybody that's helped me or the listeners or combination just in general. we are going to preview the weekend in just a little bit. Like I said, there's not like the biggest standout, let's be honest, as boxing fans. You may not like it, but McGregor against Khabib clearly is the standout fight for the weekend. Now, DAZN has a busy-ass weekend. They have the, you know, the fight card that's headlined by Vargas and Delorme in Chicago. And then, you know, the World Boxing Super Series kicks in. And, you know, one of the monster from Japan, Inoue, you know, he's got a fight with Payano. And there's an undercard fight there as well. So we will talk a little bit about that. But we're going to, and there's ESPN Plus and ESPN 2. It's a busy weekend, actually. But we got to talk about news. So as I mentioned, I kind of already gave my thought on the HBO out of boxing. I'm surprised they're 100% out of boxing. I'll say that. I didn't think they'd actually pull all the way out. But if you're going to pull out, you might as well pull all the way out. You know what I mean? Pause. Well, not pause, actually. I'll just keep moving. You know, from a fan standpoint of boxing, and, you know, is there some sentiment that I have about, oh, man, you know, they had so many great fights and all that? Definitely. Definitely. It's just the last chunk of years, you know, you've also seen their product. You know, they had like a little bit of Like, even, like if you look at the last decade, it seemed like HBO was stuck on star building and star building almost alone. You know, that's what it felt like. And there was a time on HBO, especially in the 90s, when, you know, pay-per-view guys could stay busy on HBO or have quality fights on HBO still. And it wasn't all pay-per-view. You can go back and look how many times some of these guys fought on a regular HBO, not just pay-per-view. That obviously wasn't going to be the case for the most part. How many times has Canelo in the last, you know, handful of years fought on there? Not many. And it seemed like Golovkin was heading down that path too, you know, for the most part. So, and, you know, 2013, I actually thought they had a pretty good year because of the pressure all of a sudden on the promoters that were with HBO saying, all right, let's put on some good-ass fights because, you know, now the Golden Boy and Al Haymon fighters are with Showtime. We got competition, real competition. But even before that, Super 6. Now, you can say shit about the Super 6 all you want as far as injuries and delays, but the idea of a round robin, the idea of a tournament, the idea everybody's fighting each other, it was pretty damn good idea. Now, it didn't, like I said, the delivery didn't always, it dragged out too long. But the fact that they were willing to get, you know, to have that many people in one room, and it was kind of cool because not that we got to see all the behind-the-scenes talk, I'm not going to say, but we got a little backdoor talk where you could see promoters going back at each other, you know. What was that, Fight Camp 360 or what did they call that back then? But that was good. That was really good. And then when Espinoza took over and they could kind of see, like, hey, we got a, you know, CBS, Les Moons, Showtime really stepped up. They stepped up their budget. They took on Heyman and Golden Boy's roster, and they started kicking ass. And they did, like, late 2012, 2013, and a good chunk of 2014. Most people think of 2014 as a shitty year for Showtime. It's not true. The first 6 months, 7 months weren't. Once we got in to the Salka stuff and then the filler because the PBC was coming in 2015, yes, then that sucked and it hurt Showtime. In 2015. Now, 2016, Showtime has built back very, very, very well. Their subscriber base has gone up. As far as for boxing, the ratings have gone up. Never, you know, very rarely going over a million, barely, basically never, just once. Because, you know, in the last couple of years, because, you know, they didn't have Canelo and Cotto, some of those guys that actually were part of those fights. That made them go for a million, you know, in that realm when there was a moment where they had Cotto and Canelo Showtime on their airwaves. So from 2016 on, when you look at Crawford, when you look at even Luis Ortiz at that time, his two opponents, some of the cards that they gave us were just eh. And in the last 2 years, they may have had some good cards throughout the year, but it was also a bunch of filler, and there just wasn't a bunch on. You know, we had large gaps of time where you're like, so when's their next fight? Holy crap, that's a long ways off. So not surprised, or I shouldn't say shocked. I'm a little surprised they pull all the way out, like I said, but it is what it is. 45 years, 111 shows. So kudos to you, HBO, and I think it's a good time for you to get out. And it is funny because when you see Jim Lampley, and that's what I mean about star building. And then, you know, their broadcast team have been so skewed and so biased at times. And you're going to have a broadcast team that's going to be a little biased, obviously. You're going to want a star build, obviously. But sometimes the fight would be going on, and they're too busy bringing up Marvin Hagler's jab and how this guy jabs just like him, and they want to bring up all these great old fighters, but it's like, well, what about the last round where old boy won the round on the guy you're calling Marvin Hagler potentially? You know, so to me it was like, dude, I get it. The casual fan, they're good at playing to them, no doubt about it, and you have to. You have to. But I think the Jim Lampley fight game, that show kind of summed it up as far as biasness. You know, and I tweeted out a while ago, right around the, when this news broke about HBO, you know, leaving the boxing business. There was a moment, like a monologue, I believe at the end or close to the end of one of his shows, Jim Lampley. And he's ripping the PBC. He is just going at it. And he's basically saying when the PBC disperses and it goes away, these fighters are going to make their way back. Oh my God, it's just so funny when you look at it now, man. Oh my God, it's so funny. But anyway, I think I covered that enough. What are some other news items that we can get into real quick? Okay, so Broner. Well, hold on. We'll wait on that. Billy Joe Saunders has failed a VADA test. It supposedly was in a nasal spray. It's a substance that increases your heart rate. There is some things positive that you get out of it. And maybe I shouldn't say positive for your body, but, you know, there's some benefits. Performance-enhancing drugs, and there is an enhancement. Let's put it that way. Pause. So anyway, here's the thing, though. For WADA, they're out of competition for USADA and WADA, which technically USADA is supposed to go under the WADA rules. That's a whole different ballgame. But the UCAD, which is the UK drug testing thing that we'd always heard so many times, Eddie Hearn talking about it a lot, saying, oh, our fighters are already tested year-round. And that is true, but only to an extent. They're not tested over and over and over again randomly. They may be tested randomly. You may not know when the test is coming, and you only have a week or something to schedule it and say, hey, on this date, you got to take this test, you know, that type of thing. But they weren't doing their due diligence. It wasn't random year-round enough of them, basically, is what I'm saying. You can say year-round and only test someone four times, six times a year. That's not doing a whole lot. It's better than the system we had years ago. But anyway, this nasal spray where they say the substance was from, and in the UK, as far as they're testing, the UCAD, out of competition, which is really weird, is 12 hours before the fight. Like, what? Now, maybe it's just on these, what they deem minor substances that they feel maybe not, won't get as much out of it in the long term. Maybe it will only, you know, help you for a day or a half a day. I have no clue. And maybe that's it. They, you know, you get your heart beating a certain pace. I don't know. But right now it's up to the Massachusetts, because the fight's in Boston. So the athletic department or the state, you know, athletic commission, not department. I guess it's a department in a sense. They're going to have to figure it out. How bad is this substance? WADA says that, you know, he shouldn't fight on our rules. UCAD, where he's, you know, he's getting tested, they said it's okay, so he could probably be like, well, dude, it's okay. I thought I was doing the right course. It's up to you to know that substance is banned by WADA. So we're going to find out more about it in the coming days, but that's where it stands right now. We really don't know. The fight's in the United States. It's up to that state athletic commission. And each commission is different. We have 50 freaking states. Well, more than that, technically. But we won't get into that. District of Columbia, I see ya. Anyway, that's that. Couple of news items. Oh, here's a good one. And, you know, being a Mikey Garcia fan anyway, Mikey Garcia has agreed to terms with his mandatory to be able to keep his WBC lightweight belt to take on Richard Comey, who's a solid vet, a very good mandatory. Like, sometimes mandatories are just pushovers. It's just like, hey, let's collect a little, you know, the sanctioning belt. Let's collect a little money. Let's get you another camp and a knockout. Let's build you. This one, I'm not saying that, you know, Garcia's not going to beat Comey or that he's going to struggle with him, but it's a good style fight, and it's a good fight. I think it'll be fun to watch, no doubt about it. They don't have an exact date, whether that's December or January. I don't know, but I really hope that it's December or January. And then that way Lomachenko will fight in December, Pedraza, and we can get that fight, Lomachenko and Garcia. Of course, Pedraza and Comey, you know, they're seeing it a different way. They want to upend and upset the apple cart. So that's a bit of news. There is some other news as far as Showtime during the day, and this will get into the Wilder Fury stuff, their undercard. They're having a press conference started Monday for all those people that didn't think the fight would happen. It's here. Monday was London. Yesterday was New York, and today is L.A. I think they're going to probably – I could see them spending, you know, the next couple days in L.A. just doing a bunch of media stuff. But anyway – Showtime, the day of that fight, before it, not head up, but before it, it kind of sounds like it's going to play as kind of a prelim. Adonis Stevenson against Oleksandr Vostik, which is a good fight. You may have to sit down when I talk about this. I think I said this before, but Adonis Stevenson has two good opponents in 2018. Can you believe it? So that's going to play before. They're going to try to get it going before, so I don't know exactly what time that'll be, but that is something that they're saying anyway. On the undercard, Luis Ortiz, who will he fight? No clue. We heard the false rumor about Joe Joyce and Luis Ortiz. That would be dumb at this point. I've watched the fight, don't get me wrong, as a fan, but I don't like that fight right now. But Luis Ortiz is rumored to be on there. We don't know who he's going to fight, whether that's Brazil or not. I don't know. That would be a good fight, though, because then it's a mando. It's a mandatory. But would Brazil want to lose his spot, considering what we know now from the WBC convention that I'm going to get to in just a moment? We've heard Joe Joyce against Gerald Washington would be a really good fight. We've also heard Gervonta Davis against Abner Mares. I'd say as far as name recognition and then having a Mexican-American, you know, look on there, you know, I think that would be a smart fight. Whether you like the fight or not, I think stylistically it's a fun fight to watch. It doesn't hurt to have a Mexican or Mexican-American on the undercard, obviously, and in Staples Center. But I think that would be the biggest fight. Name recognition that we get is Davis and Mares. I don't see – well, that Spence Garcia was never going to happen on the co-feature. But even that Leo Santa Cruz and Gary Russell Jr., when you can make probably $1 million gate at Staples Center, you're probably not going to put that on the undercard. It'd be different if it was a bigger pay-per-view where they knew they were going to do $1 million-plus, and they knew they had, you know – 15, 20 million at the gate. You know, that's different. With that Canelo and Mayweather fight, when they put Matisse and Garcia on the undercard, that was awesome, but they also knew that they were going to knock it out of the park, whereas they're trying to make this a profitable event, which is not always, you know, the easiest thing to do. So we'll see. But, yeah, that's really the names I've heard. We're going to get more clarification. Oh, yeah, and then – of course, Keith Thurman against Jose Cito Lopez or Zab Judah. And, you know, either way, there is, you know, percentages of the fan base that would know Zab Judah still, or even to a lesser extent, Jose Cito Lopez. He has been in some, a good fight with Ortiz and a good fight with Maidana. And so, you know, your avid fan, maybe not your most hardcore of the hardcore, they know him, but even your avid boxing fan who pays attention throughout a month, they're going to remember Jose Cito Lopez. And I think Thurman Lopez has a comeback fight. That actually isn't a bad fight. That's about it from there. Now, as far as Manny Pacquiao, we've been thinking, is he going to go to the zone and fight Amir Khan and on Sky Sports pay-per-view? What's he going to do? Is he going to try to fight somebody and use ESPN to try to top rank, you know, to try to find an opponent. Well, the rumor is, and I stress rumor at this point, that Adrian Broner is signed with Al Heyman. I'm sorry. Manny Pacquiao has signed with Al Heyman. That's the rumor. It's a rumor, 2-3 fight deal. I don't know. It's a rumor right now. We don't know. But I wouldn't completely like throw it out either. It makes a lot of sense because this is why. The rumor is Adrian Broner against Manny Pacquiao is next. And that would probably be in, like, I've heard early spring or January or something like that. So you got Broner Mayweather in the winter. God, I'm just all over the place. Broner Pacquiao and the winner would fight Mayweather, because remember, we found out that maybe Mayweather and Pacquiao will have a rematch. And now McGregor is throwing his hat, in the ring too to try to get a rematch with Mayweather. So who the frick knows, but I think it'd be smart for Manny Pacquiao to sign with Al Heyman, though. And I thought that for a while. Because of the talent and the names he has at that weight class. Now, sounded like he only wants 2 or 3 fights, which I hope that's all he wants. I don't want to see him fight 5-6 more times, but we'll see. That is a rumor as of right now. And then one more. Well, actually, Isaac Dogbo signed a more of a long-term contract to be at least co-promoted with Top Rank. I think he's still co-promoted. I'm not really sure. But it does, the contract calls for 3 fights a year. So good for Isaac Dogbo. That's been one of the things that have come out of that Top Rank ESPN. A feel-good story. A guy that beat a guy that some people, and obviously promotional-wise, wasn't supposed to beat, Magdanello. So that was a good fight, too, by the way. And he knocked him out. And now he's going to be on ESPN. Let's hope they don't, shove him on ESPN Plus twice a year or anything like that. Once a year would be fine on ESPN Plus, and then twice on ESPN. That'd be good. So kudos to you, Isaac Bogde. And it was a good – or Bogde. God, I am just backwards right now. I'm trying to rush the rest of the show because I'm running out of time. Dogbo. One of the really good stories of 2018, by the way. Been a lot of action-packed fights so far. And then one other note, and Eddie Hearn, through the zone, obviously hasn't been able to land the big names just yet. Now he's talking to Canelo, he's talking to Golovkin, he's been talking to Mikey Garcia, he's been talking to Sean Porter, he's been talking a lot. So I'm assuming he's going to get one of these guys at some point. Especially if it's only a 3-fight deal or something like that. Which was brought up as this is going to happen. And Eddie Hearn said, well, it's actually not going to happen just yet. We're not finished or anything like that. It's not a done deal like everybody's saying. However, it actually is there now for the taking if Chavez Jr. wants it. And this is what I'm talking about. And I bring this up because this is desperation right here. This is sheer desperation. Now, in 2012, was it? Yeah, 2012, JCC Jr., Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., fought Sergio Martinez. And Martinez, pretty much handled him until the last 2 rounds, especially the last round, right, when Chavez knocked him down. Martinez's knee was never the same, yada, yada, yada. But they're thinking of a part 2, and I actually heard it was in Vegas. November 17th is the date I was hearing that they had, I believe, was it the Mandalay or the MGM on hold? Something like that. But wow, dude. Really, Eddie? Is this is what it's come to? You said it's going to take a little while. And I believe that. In the meantime, you got to spend some money, but are you really going to spend money here? Now, I understand the Mexican-American, fan base is large. So I'm sure you actually will get in the first fight I'm sure you'll get even some casual fans maybe, oh, that first fight, that's right, Chavez was, you know. But that was 6 years ago. Like, I don't know. Hey, you know, you got to do it. You got to spend the money. But so right now, Sergio Martinez and JCC Jr. could fight. Eddie Hearn said if Chavez wants it, you could sign on the dotted line. This is really weird. Because, you know, had they fought a couple years after, be as bad. But to fight this long, and the last fight you saw with Chavez Jr. was a complete no-show. And then Martinez has been out of the ring for how long? Like, this is bad, dude. Wasn't it? When was that Cotto fight? Was that 2013 or 2014? I think it was 2014. But anyway, he's been out of the ring for a while, and this is just, oh my God, this is pretty shocking. Now we're going to talk about the WBC. And by the way, Eddie Hearn recently, out of Ellie Setback News, he recently said that he actually, it's not just, it's a guarantee that he's going to send to Wilder, but it's not just a flat fee. He realizes that if he wants to sign this fight before Wilder and Fury fight, which obviously wouldn't be that smart of an idea for Wilder and Fury, because if they did, you know, do better than they thought, then that would just increase their value. But it sounds like he's ready to finally give him a percentage. He wants to give him a percentage, not just a flat fee. Now, what is it? No clue yet. We may know some details. I don't know. But as far as out of the WBC convention, where we got that news about Mikey Garcia and Richard Comey, David Benavidez, we talked about him too. He's been made a champion in recess by the WBC, and will be given help to overcome his problems after testing positive for coke. Okay, so they're going to sideline him for a little bit. Now, what is it? Yildirim and Anthony Durrell, Avril Yildirim, is that the dude who fought? Wait a second. Is that the guy that fought Eubank? Tell me that's not the guy that fought Eubank. Is that the guy that fought Eubank, dude? Let me see this real quick. I believe it is. Because didn't he just smoke him? Let me double check. Yes, it is. I believe it is. So that guy's had a winning streak since then, but he hasn't beaten anybody. So anyway, that's a decision they made. So a vacant belt is up for grabs and basically becoming an extra mandatory. But they instead of Durrell going, well, what the hell, I got to wait around longer, they're going to give him an interim just to satisfy it, basically. It looks like Eubank rejected it. I don't know. Anyway, here's another one. And remember, heading into this fight, the WBC had already decided that Jermall Charlo would get the shot at the winner of Canelo Golovkin. They actually made a special exception for the rematch and all that. That's what they said. Now, as you know, I think if Golovkin would have won, they would have had a different ruling. Potentially, maybe not. But now that Canelo won, they have a different ruling. The WBC has ordered Gennady Golovkin to fight for their interim champion, which is Charlo. Basically, like they gave Charlo in his last fight an interim strap because he was waiting around, similar to what Durrell was just doing. So then they said, hey, Canelo, you can have a voluntary in December, voluntary defense. Golovkin, you have to fight Jermall Charlo in order to be able to, for the right to fight Canelo for the third time. So that's awesome for Jermall Charlo, unless, you know, it matters where Golovkin is. It sounded like Golovkin team did want to work on a fight-by-fight basis. That's what they were interested in. Now, we'll see. Maybe they'll fight a, you know, maybe they'll sign a two- or three-fight deal or a two-fight deal with an option. Who knows? But that's where he stands right now. So, obviously, if you want to take that route, you'd probably sign with Heyman right now because of this fight. But then again, maybe not. Maybe it wouldn't matter. Maybe Al would say it doesn't really matter who he signed with. Let's make this fight. Try to help Charlo and say this is your best bet. Who knows? So, yeah, we'll see what comes of that. Also, Sean Porter, this is no surprise here, has been ordered to rematch Keith Thurman in a unification for the WBC-WBA welterweight as soon as Thurman is ready to actually return, meaning return to a championship-level fight. So that's really no secret there. The WBC also ordered Jorge Linares and Adrian Broner as a final eliminator for a fight with super lightweight titleist Jose Ramirez. So that's kind of interesting. I wonder if a fight with Broner and Linares would potentially happen. I don't know. And then, by the way, just to clear up, the IBF was the Richard Colmay. The IBF, that was actually, he was the IBF mandatory, whereas the WBC ordered a mandatory challenger, Luke Campbell, the guy who gave Linares a really good fight in their last fight and who recently just won. That's his mandatory, but as we know, you know, it's been ordered, but you could do a step aside, that type of thing. So I don't think that would hurt a unification. Also from the WBC, they've ordered Julian J-Rock Williams against Arislandi Lara as a final eliminator for Jermall Charlo's belt. Kind of interesting there. Also, Francisco Vargas and Eduardo Hernandez in a final eliminator for Miguel Burchell. And this is the one I like. The proposed, not that I don't like some of those others, of course, the proposed Gary Russell Jr. and Leo Santa Cruz WBC-WBA featherweight unification has now been officially ordered by the WBC. So, lots of news out there when it comes to this WBC stuff. Like I said earlier, this is from ESPN. Eddie Hearn declared a deal is done and can be signed today for Sergio Martinez and Julio Chavez, Cesar Chavez Jr., if Chavez Jr. wants it. But there's also, you know, some talk about Chavez Jr. being on the undercard and him fighting Angulo. And Angulo's always kind of been a West Coast crowd favorite type guy. You know what I mean? So, yeah, a lot of freaking news there. A lot to throw at you in a short amount of time. But that is the WBC convention news. Yada, yada, yada. Right? So, not much time left of the show. Got to shut it down here in just a moment. As far as this weekend, like I said, I'm not going to sit here and act like it's some phenomenal weekend or anything like that. However, it's active as shit. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, and I've mentioned several times throughout every year, sometimes these busy weekends where maybe one fight doesn't just, you know, capture all your attention, although that is in the UFC, you know, McGregor and Khabib. But there is action. ESPN2 and ESPN Deportes, the Golden Boy card has Oscar Negrete versus Joseph Franco, the 10-rounder for bantamweights. We also have ESPN Plus has a card with Louis Neri. He's actually coming off that suspension. So ESPN Plus has a different card from England. Nicole Adams is probably the biggest. Well, actually, Jack Catterall against O'Hara Davies. That'll probably be an interesting fight there. That one's from England. What is it, Lancaster? Something like that. And then, of course, DAZN, Jesse Vargas versus Thomas Delorme. To me, that's an interesting fight. It's an interesting fight. It's a good style fight. I don't think it's a walkthrough for Jesse Vargas whatsoever. I think it's going to be a really good fight. Thomas Delorme has been in a lot of spirited fights. He usually doesn't necessarily come out on top. The last time he did upset or beat Jamal James, who was an unbeaten prospect at that time. He did have, although it was a short fight with Terrence Crawford, he did have moments in the fight. I'll give him that. So he's a good fighter. And Jesse Vargas is just probably a level above him, but that's probably a good fight. I like Jesse Vargas. Arturo Beterbia against Callum Johnson for Beterbia's IBF lightweight title. I like Beterbia to knock Johnson out, but Johnson will probably be game. Danny Roman against Gavin McDonald. That'll be a pretty good fight. Danny Roman is an upcoming young fighter, and I'm really excited to see how he fights in this fight. You know, is he going to take care of business? Is he going to be that guy who can punch a lot like he showed in his last fight and show some skill as well? It's an interesting fight. Gerald Miller, big baby, against Tomas Adamek. This is solely for to try to get the Polish people. Shouts out to the Polish boxing fans, but unless Adamek finds, like, you know, some big punch early. I mean, he can outbox you, though. I'll give him that. He can outbox heavyweights, some heavyweights. But I just think Gerald Miller, Big Baby, he'll probably just cut the ring off and just outwork him. I just think Adamek is too far gone. You know what I mean? He's too long in the tooth, but you never know. You never know. He has kind of bounced back from some rough outings, so we'll see. But if Big Baby Miller is anything like a real contender, he should take care of business here. And then there's just basically prospect-level fights after that. Rung Vasai returns against Iran Diaz in Bangkok, Thailand. What else we got? Then from Japan, Yokohama, Japan, Inoue against Juan Carlos Payano. And this will kick off the quarterfinals for the World Boxing Super Series. Also on the card is Relic against Trovansky. That's also part of the 140 division for the WBCC or the WBSS. And then Ken Shiro, Milan Melendo, could be an interesting fight, actually. That could be an action-packed fight. One of the better fights was it last week or the week before, from Japan. That was a good-ass fight. So that looks like a pretty good card to me, actually. Also a that's next week. Forget it. So, you know, I don't know. I think the DAZN cards are filled with fights that potentially could be competitive on paper. Some of them will be good style matchups, like I think that Vargas Delorme may pop off there. But I'm going with most. I mean, I don't really see. I think Relic will beat Trojanski. I like the monster to knock or to win. I don't know if he's going to knock him out, but I think he'll win. Danny Roman, that's probably the one that kind of stands out to me against Gavin McDonald. I want to see if Daniel Roman can just kind of bring it consistently. We talked about fighting at levels, and I want to see if he's a guy, you know, that is fighting at levels, or if he's, you know, a guy that's going to be more consistent. So anyway, that's a lot of news. McGregor, Khabib. Now, if Khabib gets him on the ground, it sounds like he'll be able to roughhouse him. He'd probably be able to control him down there. Obviously, McGregor's not, that's not his forte. He can throw, you know, he can kick, no doubt about it, but he likes to use that left hand. He likes to kind of be on the outside a little bit and show movement and then kind of attack. You know, he likes to kind of be the counterpuncher, let the guy come to him and just ruthlessly attack. The first couple rounds, we know Conor McGregor is usually all about it, but he does have plenty of moments where he falls apart and gets tired. If it goes to the ground and you're in the third and fourth and fifth round, I favor Khabib there. But I think McGregor will ultimately get the job done. But he's been out of the he's been out of the ring for a while, but he's been out of the octagon for a really long, long time. I mean, think about it. It's well over a year. He's been, I mean, he hasn't fought even boxing was last two Augusts ago. What was his last fight before that? Sometime in the spring or something like that? I think that's what it was, in the spring. But anyway, McGregor, Khabib, who you got? Message me. MMA fans that are kind of casual boxing fans or they love the, you know, both sports, holler at me, man. Message me on Twitter or, you know, if you have my, you know, text me if you have my cell phone or whatever. I kind of want to get your intake here. I think McGregor will win, though. I do think McGregor will win. Anyway, let's wrap it up. That was a whole lot of information in a short amount of time. I'm going to get the hell out of here. Enjoy the weekend. Like I said, there is a variety of fights headlined by a UFC fight, of course, McGregor could be. But let's hope we get one of these barn burners that we could talk about and be like, wow, dude, that was awesome. Let's hope it's not just one-sided fights. I think some of those DAZN fights might turn out to be competitive, man. Let's hope. And then we can really judge Matchroom Sports USA DAZN on their first card. I want to do it after because I already kind of gave my thoughts about the card when it was announced a little while ago. So I didn't want to go too detail into this. Anyway, let's get out of here. Enjoy the weekends. We'll be back next week. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival, or the bullshit, the whole bag, and when you become the world champion, you're like, you know what, I made it. Now I'm show you it's this. So I'm going to get any dollar worth.